In looking at the issues around social media addiction in adolescence, we asked ourselves two other questions. Will we know whether these issues have long-term effects? And why does the smartphone seem to get a pass? We're going to look into those areas on this episode of Today in Tech. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Today in Tech. I'm Keith Shaw. Joining me on the show today is Professor Joseph Trunzo from Bryant University. He is a professor of psychology and also a licensed practicing clinical psychologist. Welcome to the show, Professor Trunzo.
Thanks for having me, Keith. Happy to be here.
So in your role as a clinical psychologist and then also your work as an academic, you know, what have you seen when it comes to the rise of social media and then potential behavior disorders from the use of that?
Well, it hits on a number of different factors. So first and foremost, one of the primary ways that younger people consume information these days is through social media. So whether it's TikTok or Instagram or whatever, it has a very driving factor in their behavior. So we've seen this in these TikTok challenges and things along those lines. You get people doing sometimes pretty outlandish and dangerous things. So if you think about how, before social media, people were influenced by their peers, you know, kids were influenced by their peers that were immediately surrounding them. And then you explode that on the social media front. So you're getting all kinds of information from people all over the world. All of those things are going to have the potential to influence the behavior of kids and teenagers and adolescents and young adults and adults for that matter. So that in and of itself can drive behavior. And then the other aspects of this that I think can be really concerning are a lot of times what gets posted on social media is very, very curated. So might not be representative of real life, might not be representative of what someone actually looks like, whether it's body image or clothing or makeup or hair or how someone is presenting how amazing their life is, when in fact it might actually not be. The idea here is that some image of how life is or how life is supposed to be for other people is presented in a potentially unrealistic way. Mm-hmm. And then that sets up the danger that someone who's consuming social media thinks that their life or their physical appearance should be X, Y, or Z. And if it's not, then they automatically feel less than, or like they're failing in some way, or they're inadequate, or they're not good enough. And then that in turn sets up the fertile ground for things like depression, anxiety, body image issues. We have to be very, very careful about how we consume this information, and that it's, pardon the pun, filtered in the right way, mm-hmm. as in like filtered through our minds, and we have a very realistic idea of what these images actually represent and what they're trying to accomplish.
Yeah. Now, some of those issues were always around before social media and smartphones, right? You could talk about body image things just from people looking at magazines or like People magazine or those types of things too, right?
Yeah, like,
what
of course.
Was it, has it gotten worse because of something on either the phone or the social media because it's more instant or?
So, yeah, I don't think there's any question that it's gotten worse. So, the issues that were driven by this before might be, sort of like a billboard, a magazine advertisement,
yeah,
a television show, a movie, things along those lines, which were very, which are typically very, sort of discrete stimuli, right? You go to a movie for 2 hours, you watch a television show for half an hour, you read a magazine, you look at that picture, you put it down, hopefully you go out and ride a bike or play a sport or do something else. But this thing which is attached to everyone's hip everywhere, mm-hmm. mine was right there, provides this constant flow of information. And we all know that the last thing this thing is used for is actually a phone,
right?
This is the primary device through which younger people and adults for that matter are consuming information. And it is constantly being presented. Ping, 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 notification. Did you see this? And as you know, it's human nature for us to kind of seek out that information. So if there's a little notification thing on there, we want to know what that is. We want to know what's in there. So if the sound goes off or the icon shows up, which it does all day, every day, that that discretion, right, those discrete periods of time where we were exposed to it before, has basically been blurred, if not completely obliterated, by the ever-present smartphone. And, you know, we had it to some degree when it was just computers, but now that we carry this thing around in our pockets all the time, the influx of that information is literally, it's constant.
Yeah. And when we talked before the show, when did you first start noticing that this was a problem? Because I think it goes back further than maybe I would have thought, correct? Like, when did you first noticing it, either on campus or with some of your patients?
So it depends on which problem we're talking about. So like, if you're looking at like the rise of just general rise of anxiety and depression, I think that goes as far back as, you know, 24-hour cable news, right? So just the ability to constantly consume information about all the terrible things that are happening in the world, as opposed to, you know, like reading the morning newspaper, watching the evening news at night, and then you're pretty much done, maybe listening to the radio in between. So 24-hour cable news, I think, has really driven a lot of the increased levels of depression and anxiety. It's just my opinion. And then when the internet hit and computers and, you know, again, further 24/7 access, the ability to access that information at a moment's notice through a laptop or through a desktop computer. But even those things were still somewhat tethered, right? If you wanted to go to a desktop computer, you had to go to a desktop computer and, you know, sit down at a desk and do that. Maybe things were coming in while you were working, but hopefully you had the discipline to kind of turn that stuff off while you were doing your job and you were focused on other things. But with the phone, you know, we never want to really turn our phones off or turn the notifications off, because what if somebody is trying to get in touch with us?
Right. Right?
We have to be accessible 24/7. So because those things are on all the time, we get the notifications almost all the time. So it sort of started with, you know, the influx of, you know, much, much more accessible media than we used to have. But I think it's just accelerated and exploded with the smartphone, which on the one hand is just, it's an amazing tool that we all use all the time. We literally have all the information in the world at our fingertips. But, you know, it's also a constant flood, which has, you know, which has potential concerns and potential dangers.
Yeah. And what's interesting too is that, you know, you're bringing up the 24-hour news cycle, and now it seems that most young people get their news not from just a news feed or a dedicated news app or things like that. They get it from that social media feed. So
absolutely,
having the two of those things integrated, does that cause a problem where you're getting news, but then you're getting all of this other stuff, this other quote unquote content, which can be harmful, right?
Yeah. Look, so what's, it's basically an open portal for whatever wants to flow through it, right?
Yeah.
The only person who controls what comes through that portal is the user. And, you know, hopefully as adults, we have the impulse control and the wherewithal and the insight and the wisdom to say, like, that's not good for me. I'm not going to continue. I'm going to turn these notifications off. I'm going to put my phone away. I'm going to focus on other things. But even adults have a hard time doing that. So you think about like the adolescent mind, brain's not fully developed, impulse control is not fully developed. All adolescents want to do is feel like they belong to something, mm-hmm. like they are, like they're part of a group, like they, like they're connected in some way. And so they are going to be loath to shut off access to any of that, which just leaves the, and to be like much more wisdom focused in their choices about what kind of media they choose to consume, what kind of communication they choose to have. So it's really concerning what what kids have access to and the information that that flows through.
Right, right. And, you know, I wanted to ask you also about the other potential negative behavior. It comes from that envy or jealousy factor. We've talked about this a little bit on other shows where people will see what's on a feed, and then, you know, you see a lot of posts of maybe people that are have a new car or they're on vacation, and then that leads into this jealousy cycle, an air of bad feelings. Is that as bad as some of the anxiety issues that come up, or is it a different aspect of it?
So I think both.
Yeah.
So I think that there's potential that it's as bad as the anxiety issues, just, you know, in a different way. I also think it has a tendency to feed some of the anxiety and depression issues. So look, you know, all human beings have a tendency to compare themselves to other people, right? So, and we also tend to default thinking that other people are better off than we are. So that person, it's true. That person has, you know, that's the old saying, the grass is always greener on the other side.
Sure.
Is rooted in solid social psychological theory. So, the difference is, you know, if I don't know anything about you and I don't see anything about you and I just assume that, you know, that you have more money and you have a more attractive partner and a better car and a better job and all those sorts of things. All right. So I'm assuming that, but I don't really have any evidence to support it. So it's easier for me to kind of, you know, break that down and keep myself on track. But if you're constantly posting things on social media about, you know, your wonderfully attractive partner and the piles of money that you have and how, and the great new car that you bought and the fabulous vacation that you just took and, your awesome job and like all those sorts of things. Well, now I'm getting this evidence, how factual it actually is.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't make any difference, but I'm getting this evidence, these curated images that support my innate tendency to believe that the grass is always greener. So then I'm going to be jealous, or I'm going to be angry, or I'm going to feel terribly about my own lot in life, whether it's my physical appearance or how much money I have or whatever it is. Like, people will compare with wherever their closest pain point is. So if I'm constantly comparing myself to other people and therefore constantly feeling inadequate in that comparison, that's going to drive a lot of negative emotion, whether it's depression because I feel unworthy, or anxiety because I feel like I'm not not performing adequately. I'm not living up to what I need to be doing. So, you know, it's going to drive me to, you know, work harder for reasons that that might not necessarily be the best reasons to work hard.
From a psychological standpoint, the people that do those postings, the people that are constantly posting about their new car or their mm-hmm. vacation, I always felt like the people that do that on my feed were just oversharing, and I was like, why are you doing this? Go enjoy your vacation. So is there, from a psychological standpoint, is there a reason that people are doing that? Is it because they feel inadequate and they need to post this to show to their friends and their circles that they're successful or that they are doing well?
So it certainly could be. So look, I think that the people who are posting these things can be driven by a number of different factors. So, you know, if they're professional social media people and they're influencers, they're just posting, they're just posting whatever they want to post in order to get clicks to make money.
Yeah. Right?
So, but as far as, like, you know, your friend or your neighbor or other sort of like run of the mill people who wouldn't fall into the category of being an influencer, I think, you know, there's certainly some people who just genuinely want to share what's going on in their lives with the people around them. But I don't think there's any question that there are also people who have their own insecurities, maybe because they were just looking at somebody else's post that shows how wonderful their life is.
And they feel
compelled to post something that shows how wonderful your own life is.
I don't mind the people that post vacation photos after they're done with the vacation, but what irritates me is that they're on the middle of the cruise, or they're on their middle of their vacation, and they keep on, is like, take the turn the phone off, go enjoy your vacation, and then tell me about it afterwards. It always feels weird when it feels like I'm experiencing the vacation along with them, and maybe that's what they want, but I don't know. It always felt weird to me.
Sorry. Yeah, look, we can't make broad assumptions about what's behind the reason for every single person and why they post these things. But I think your point about, you know, is there some of it that's being driven by some insecurity about, you know, whether it's wanting to feel like they have a good life or just getting feedback from other people that says, wow, that looks like a vacation. Oh, I wish it looks like a great vacation. Oh, I wish I was there. Yeah. So all of that, all of those likes, that reinforcement, all of those things affect us neurologically, psychologically. Anytime somebody posts something on social media, one of the first things you're going to look at is like, geez, like how many people saw this? What are the comments say? You know, am I getting likes? Are people saying like so-and-so? It's just a much wider and broader template of social feedback than we've had throughout the entire course of human history.
Yeah. Do you think that the smartphone gets a free pass when it comes to addiction? And, you know, we don't talk necessarily, I mean, we do, about gaming apps, gambling apps, those types of things, addiction to porn, that kind of thing. Does that, if we took away the smartphone, would social media addiction be as big of a problem than it is? It's more like the combination of social media plus the smartphone that's causing this?
I don't know that I would say that the smartphone gets a free pass.
Okay.
I think that people realize.
That's me saying, not you.
No. I think that people realize, the danger of having all of this information at your fingertips and getting this constant flood of news or images or whatever. So I wouldn't say that people don't realize it. I would say that I don't know that we realize the true scope of it. So, in many respects, the consumption of all of this information, social media, news, blah, 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 being so readily available access through a smartphone, in some respects, it's kind of like a grand cognitive experiment. Like we really don't have any, what's this going to look like after 20, 30, 40, 50 years? I mean, think about how television changed the landscape of our culture,
right?
And how we think and how we function and how we operate as a culture and as a society. The smartphone is just as, if not more, even more revolutionary in terms of the potential impact that it has on human society and development. And we really have no idea what the ultimate outcome of that's going to be.
Right, right. So I wanted to ask another question about when you are meeting with patients, do they readily admit that they might have a problem with social media, or is it more of they come in with some behavioral issues and as you talk to them, you might realize that a lot of the anxiety or other behavioral issue might be caused by an addiction to social media? Is it chicken and egg type thing?
So I would say that both happen, but it's far more frequent that that I'm the one who's suggesting or pointing out, hey, this might be an issue. Like let's take a look at this. Like you're talking about all of these things.
Yeah.
And if we dig into and look at some of the things that are driving a lot of the negative emotion that you're having or the difficulty that you're having, a lot of it is actually connected to some of these behaviors that you're engaging in. So, why don't we try doing some things about changing that and then see what the outcome is in terms of your mood and how you're feeling and how you're functioning in your life. And we know, like, there are people who say, like, oh, you know, like they take their social media breaks, or they shut down their accounts, or it's harder for people to walk away from a smartphone than it is to walk away from a social media account.
But almost without
exception, when I advise people to, sort of like, hey, like, take a news break or shut down your social media, or like, just substitute some of these, sort of like screen-based behaviors with like, go out, get some exercise, learn a new hobby, something along those lines, like interact with other people in real life. Almost without exception, people experience it as an improvement, and they end up feeling better. And I'm not by any means suggesting that we need to eradicate this technology, or that it's the root of all the evil or any of those
sure.
sorts of things.
Yeah, we've been covering that.
Yeah, it's a tool just like anything else, and if you use the tool properly, I think it can be a powerful force for good. not just in an individual's life, but in society as a whole. But if you use the tool for nefarious purposes, it can have really concerning outcomes and impacts.
Okay. And again, I think you mentioned this a little bit as well, but do we know what the long-term effects might be in something like this? Have we basically raised a generation of social media and smartphone addicts that that are going to be entering that workforce in the next 5 to 10 years? Is it just something that we have to prepare for, or is it going to just kind of fade away as people get older, like these types of behaviors?
So I don't think we know.
Yeah.
I'll put it this way. I wouldn't count on it just fading away.
Right.
Because we're talking about younger people and we're talking about youth and adolescents, but we hear just as many complaints from kids about how much their parents are on phones as we do about parents about how much their kids are on phones. So, look, the early data, I think certainly doesn't look all that good. So whether it fizzles out or whether it gets overtaken by some new technology that comes along and squashes the smartphone, I don't know. It's impossible to predict, but there's not a lot that indicates that all of this is going to lead to fantastic outcomes for overall mental health and well-being. So the increases in depression, anxiety, attention deficit issues, all of these kinds of things, we have no idea how big or how bad it's going to get. So
maybe this all goes away when we all start putting on our virtual reality headsets and then we get obsessed with living in the metaverse. And there's all sorts of other things that will happen after that.
Yeah.
And we can get rid of the smartphone part of it. And that was just a joke, by the way. That was not an actual serious thing. Until we get better headsets that people don't mind wearing. All right. Do you see similar addiction aspects in younger children or even older adults? Like, do you see the same kind of issues across generations? Or is this...
I don't think this is restricted to teenagers by any stretch. I don't work with small kids, so okay. I can't say that clinically I see a lot of like 5-year-olds that are coming in addicted to their screens.
I hope not. I hope they're not getting them that early.
Well, and I do think that we're getting a little bit of a backlash in that I do think that parents of younger kids are a lot more aware of these issues and really, really trying to limit it and kind of stem the tide a little bit. But certainly if these devices are designed to be very, very user friendly. Young kids can figure out how to use them at a very young age. I walk around the grocery store and I see, like little 4-year-olds sitting in the grocery cart, like on their screens doing the thing. They're fantastic babysitters from a convenience point of view in that regard. So I think it can certainly affect younger kids. It can certainly affect older adults. Go to any restaurant and look around at all the people who are eating and see how many people are sitting around the table of other people. And they're not necessarily talking and interacting with one another. They're on their phones. So this is not a generation specific issue. I think there are unique dangers to adolescents and young adults just because of the developmental stage that they're in. It's one thing. So let's say I'm a 53-year-old man. Let's say I become addicted to a smartphone. That's certainly possible, but I've also, my brain has developed without that addiction. Like right. I went through an entire lifetime and I grew up where these things didn't even exist. As horrified as my students would be to hear me say that. So my brain did not develop with access to this technology or these tools. Right now, our kids' brains are developing with access to this technology and these tools.
Right.
And I'm sure there are good pieces of that. And I'm sure that there are pieces of that that are we should be concerned about.
Our brains turned to mush because we were watching too much TV and playing video games in the 80s, right? Yeah.
Saturday morning cartoons.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Those were the best. All right. So is there any, I want to end this on a high note or a happy note. Is there any avenue for optimism here? Is it just the, is it the best way to address this, the raising of awareness and hopefully enough parents and enough users will recognize these signs to either tackle this on their own, or are we just headed down this path of doom?
So I don't think we're headed down the path of doom. Okay. And, you know, what you just said may actually be the best indicator of that. So our parents told us that our brains were going to turn to mush because of all the video games we played and all the Saturday morning cartoons we watched. But I don't think my brain's turned to mush yet. And if it does, it's not going to be because of that. So this might be just the next generation's version of that. And our kids might actually grow up to be just fine and in some ways even better off. So there's always sort of like the older generation's, you know, fear of the doom and gloom of what the next generation's thing is. So, you know, maybe I'm not one to just sort of say, you know, like it'll be fine. I don't have to worry about it. I do think that raising awareness and having particularly when kids are young, because that's when they're the most vulnerable, and when they're adolescents, because that's when they're vulnerable, having parents talk about, not just talk about, but actually model responsible technology use, responsible consumption of media. And if you want to look at this, you know, if you want to look at this TikTok video, okay, fine, but like, see what they're seeing, talk about what they're seeing. Like, what do you think about that?
Right.
And make sure that they get an opportunity to use your filter, because they don't have that filter because their brain's not fully developed yet.
Right.
You do. So help them to see that information through your eyes so that they can develop the wisdom around consumption of that media so that it's not as, you know, you give them kind of a suit of armor or a little bit of protection around all that information.
All right. We are out of time. Again, I wanted to thank Professor Joseph Trunzo from Bryant University for joining us on the show to talk about this. Great stuff. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. That's all the time we have for today's episodes. Don't forget to like the video, subscribe to the channel, add any thoughts that you have below. Join us every week for new episodes of Today in Tech. I'm Keith Shaw. Thanks for watching.